You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
Minister Andrew Little announced yesterday the possibility of further support for tenants of commercial property. I spoke to him about this, along with the Deputy Prime Minister's announcement yesterday that seemed to throw the Ministry of Health under the bus a bit regarding closing the border to New Zealand citizens. And we spoke about the submissions process for the Electoral Amendment Act. It was a big chat. We touched on quite a few things and I got him to explain a few things, which is always helpful from a politician. And we did even touch on whether it is okay to play rugby during level three, which, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. Anyway, I started by asking how level three is looking for him.
Well, it's kind of a return to the office, although, you know, skinny down office, and, you know, Parliament has resumed of sorts. So a little bit of normal routine returning, but it's nice to get home and have the evenings at home still.
Yeah. So with this shift, I mean, level three is not supposed to look that different to level four, and the Prime Minister has stressed the importance of that. What will be enforced at this level and what powers are available to do that?
The main thing is going to be, like, particularly for businesses that are opening, and obviously many are, is the physical distancing rules and the hygiene rules that have to apply. And I think that's been the problem we've seen with businesses, particularly fast food businesses, opening, and obviously people who had 5 weeks with no fast foods wanted to get their fix. We've seen a few problems with people congregating. So it is going to be incumbent on those businesses to sort their processes out so that they maintain those rules. So there's a combination of forms of enforcement. The police will have some powers to uphold the order that's been issued under the Health Act. So it's a combination of medical officers who set the rules and the police who are there to enforce them. We still have the civil defence emergency in place as well, and it could be that local civil defence coordinators pardon me, have some role as well. But at the moment, it's pretty much falling on the police to do that. When it comes to the workplace, WorkSafe actually has a role to play. I think their public comments have somewhat played down the role that they have to play, but they've got enforcement powers too. They can issue notices to employers on the spot, requiring them to remedy failures in terms of health and safety practice. So, look, there's a number of ways to come at it. Mm. But, you know, what has been amazing during the level four lockdown is actually most people pretty much got into the spirit of it and complied. We just need to make sure that spirit continues, even though the rules are slightly relaxed.
With the social distancing, you mentioned those people congregating, I suppose, outside of stores. How much of that, you know, the responsibility, how much of that should be on the public?
Well, on the public too, but in the end, you know, people are turning up to some commercial premises, and I've seen places where they've staked out, they've marked out what, you know, 2 metres or 1 metre looks like, and people to queue and those sorts of things. Given that a lot of these fast food places or places that are selling food, they've got the kind of one-in, one-out rule and things like that. They have to manage that. In the end, it is their customers, and they've got to help manage that. But, like everybody, and there's a heap of advertising saying what the rules are, and you'd hope that people understand that they've got to maintain that distance as well. And it's interesting, you know, people did that pretty well with all the supermarkets during the level four lockdown. People understood that there had to be physical distancing. I don't know why people have suddenly abandoned that. I did hear one explanation, which is around the fast foods, is that people kind of put in their order and they waited around outside, and somebody in the shop was yelling out whose order was ready, but people couldn't hear it. So they all sort of drew closer together and were oblivious to their breaching their physical distancing stuff. So that's where I think the businesses do have to, they've got to think very carefully about how it is that they're managing their processes so it doesn't cause people to kind of compromise those physical distancing rules.
Are people allowed to be playing rugby?
Some recreation and exercise has been kind of restored, and people have been, you know, returned to the beaches and surfing, and I was surprised that some mountain biking is allowed. That's good for me. I'm a mountain biker, so...
really?
So when it comes to rugby, I mean, certainly... playing training games and things like that and doing training is okay, but it won't be, you know, scrummaging and things like that. Your physical, you know, unless there are people in your bubble, then you do things that means you can maintain your distance. But I don't know, but people are agreeing to meet in the park and doing physical workouts and stuff.
But they shouldn't be distance. Touching each other.
No, that's why. So doing your scrummaging training and that sort of thing, and doing your line-out training, you can't be doing that unless you're dealing with people who are in your bubble, because most cases that won't apply. But if you're passing, you're running, you're doing your cardio exercises and stuff, you can do that together in a park, and that's without compromising the rules.
But that would be you're extending your bubble to that whole team, effectively.
If you're doing the close proximity stuff, yeah. But if you're staying 2 metres apart, then you're not breaching your bubble rule. You're keeping that distancing, and there's stuff. You then have to make sure that you're wiping down your rugby balls and your various whatever other equipment that you're using. If multiple people are sharing and using it, but it is possible to do more of that sort of training and exercise than was the case under level 4.
Okay, I got a bit distracted. Sorry. Back to the policing. I just wanted to touch on, you and Mary Margaret spoke earlier on during level 4, I suppose, about the kind of, you know, the fact that there is sort of over-policing in certain areas, and whether we might see this, you know, kind of replicated during this level 4 period. I've sort of done some OIAs, but obviously those are all very delayed at this point. Have we seen any kind of over-policing in areas that are kind of, you know, already over-policed?
I'm not aware of that. I mean, I've seen the general figures of the numbers of prosecutions, the number of warnings and stuff given, and names taken. I haven't seen that broken down to kind of regions or policing districts. I think actually the police, the anecdotal reports I've had is that the people the police are having trouble with, the people with kind of flash cars who just want to drive them around and all that sort of stuff. It's not people who stuck to their neighbourhoods and stuck to their homes and suburbs and stuff. But I haven't heard anything, and I haven't seen any figures to say that there's been undue attention placed in some parts of New Zealand as opposed to others.
There was a video that went around of two, I believe, Māori men who were going to the supermarket, and the police had pulled them over to question this. And the police actually confiscated the driver's license and said that they were to drive to the supermarket, and then the police would then, you know, give back the license at the supermarket. Isn't it illegal to drive without a driver's license?
Yeah, that seems totally over the top to me. I mean, police shouldn't be seizing driver's licenses. If you've got a reason to stop a person driving, then you take the person out of the car, you know. Pardon me. So, I haven't heard that story, but that's a matter that you know, those folks might want to take up with the police hierarchy or the Independent Police Conduct Authority, because that seems to me an incorrect use of the police's power.
Mm. Okay, moving on to, you announced yesterday the government is considering commercial rent relief options. So how is this going to be different to the support that's already available?
Yeah, so a lot of the support that's already been made available, there's obviously the wage subsidy has been the big thing. There's been working with the banks to provide concessionary support when it comes to loans and further credit. We've also provided some government-paid business advice as well to businesses who are working out what their business plan is to recover. But one of the big issues has been, while businesses haven't been able to operate, obviously they've had to carry their overheads, and rent is foremost amongst those. There have been calls for the government to subsidise rent or to pay the rent in substitution for the business. One of the concerns we've had is the reason we don't want to do that is we don't think commercial landlords should have their income preserved and protected when nobody else is. So we've been trying to find a mechanism that means that tenants and landlords in commercial premises have to kind of come to terms, and landlords are going to have to take a hit and accept maybe there's a period for which they're not going to be able to collect rent, or the tenant might need a period of time where they need a discount on their rent while their business recovers and they restore their kind of revenue. We had made some measures, announced some measures 2 or 3 weeks ago that meant that landlords couldn't just sort of issue their standard 10 days notice to evict a commercial tenant. They had to, we pushed those times out, so it gave more breathing space for the parties to talk. That has helped some parties, but it hasn't helped everyone. So we're now looking at a different set of measures that makes it very explicit the expectation that if a tenant has lost, you know, significant revenue, then it is expected that the landlord will discount rent or waive rent for a period of time, that at least they have some sort of negotiation and come to terms so that you preserve the future of that business. And indeed, for the landlord, they actually can, you know, further down the track, get a tenant that resumes paying rent in the normal sort of way. We're looking at that. Cabinet will make a decision on that next week and hope to make some specific announcements about that. But clearly there is a need in that space, so we're looking at what we can do there.
Right. You've acknowledged that the residential property legislation and the commercial property legislation is different, but you also said in that release that landlords need to share the burden of COVID-19 fairly with their tenants. Sorry. So this isn't actually happening in residential properties. Will there be support for those tenants in the future?
No, my media release on the landlords sharing the burden was really confined to commercial landlords. This is, you know, because the landlords of premises where businesses that simply haven't been able to operate, as opposed to residential landlords who've got tenants. And look, many tenants have obviously suffered a loss of income and so on as well. What we've done there is put a moratorium on evictions and lease terminations for residential premises, so you can't just, you know, kick people out. So we've done that, and obviously we're looking at all forms of income support mechanisms for those who've either had to, you know, significantly reduce their hours or lose their jobs completely. So, and we're looking at enhanced measures in that regard too, so that at least those who, you know, who've got to pay rent for their apartment or their flat or their house can continue to do so.
And I guess with that moratorium, it will finish at some point though. So what happens if those landlords in residential properties then kind of, you know, the consequences just come later on?
Yeah, so we'll keep all that under review. But our expectation is that for a lot of people who are not able to earn anything at the moment or earn very little or who are sustained just by the wage subsidy, that you know, life and work will begin to return in the next few weeks. The moratorium goes for a period of 6 months, so we would hope by the end of that 6 months that a lot more people, a lot more tenants and residential properties are in a more secure position. But we'll keep that under continual review, because we have to, because this is about just, you know, preserving people's situations while we all get through this very difficult set of circumstances together.
Right. Can I touch on the Deputy Prime Minister's announcement yesterday that the Ministry of Health did give advice earlier on to close borders even to New Zealand citizens? So is this legally possible?
They gave advice saying that if we, you know, we have this on us now, the coronavirus is in New Zealand, and if we really, really want to control it, stop, you know, close the borders now. And it was a very crude sort of approach. The reality is that we can't stop, at international law, we cannot stop New Zealand citizens from returning home. They have a right to cross our border and to come home. And if they can find a means to get here, an airline that will fly them, and at that time plenty of airlines were flying into New Zealand, we couldn't stop them coming back to New Zealand. So that idea didn't get very far very quickly.
Right.
It was given pretty short shrift, because it simply wasn't lawful to do so.
Right. And this, I suppose, was like the refusal, not only is with the legal aspect, but it was also the government was able to refuse or based on the procedures at the border, and that would be enough to kind of either stem the flow or whatever it is you want to call it. But at the time that decision was made, what were the powers to quarantine people coming in at the border?
We hadn't promulgated the notice under the Health Act or the Epidemic Preparedness Act, and they were sort of days apart when we were considering those. So we didn't have, there weren't specific powers in place to require, you know, New Zealanders crossing the border to quarantine or self-quarantine. There was certainly a moral, you know, message given. We would like you to do this. We were saying that from sort of February, you know, under kind of level two, I think, self-isolate if you're coming from overseas. And actually a lot of people did that anyway. But it wasn't until the various notices were issued under the two pieces of legislation that there was an enforceable basis to require people to either be quarantined or to self-isolate.
Okay. quickly, sorry to keep you so long. The Prisoner Voting Bill, the Electoral Amendment Act, is through to the next round, I suppose. You're hearing submissions today, is that correct?
The Senate Committee, yes. They've been hearing them for the last few weeks. Continuing today and tomorrow, yeah.
How much weight is given to submissions as part of this process?
Look, it's like anybody who writes in, the submission is read. Some ask to be heard, and that's been happening. Looking at some of the submissions that are coming in, they're kind of one or two sentence ones. They're not a particularly great deal of analysis. But look, there are organisations out there running campaigns who are opposed to it, who got a whole bunch of people to write various things opposed to it. But the Senate Committee's got to do its job to hear it and consider what people have said. So they'll continue to do that job. But look, this is a promise we made that we would change this law. We want it in time for the general election this year. That is still scheduled for September, so they've got a timetable to follow to get that through.
Mm. National is against this, though. If they come back into power, is it possible that they just repeal it?
They could do, but I think they are, you know, they enacted the change in the first place that prevented all prisoners from, and it's not just the right to vote, it's actually the right to enrol. That's the most insidious thing. It is a classic voter suppression thing, and at least for prisoners on short-term sentences, is simply not justified. So look, they could change the law. I think they'll find I get a lot of letters saying, look, this should have happened, this should never have happened, and the change should have happened long ago, and good on you, you know, get it up and done. So they may find that the political landscape has changed, that it's not palatable for them to do so. But look, they are who they are. The National Party is the party of voter suppression. They opposed every other measure we had trying to make it easier to vote in the 2020 general election. They opposed, you know, broadening the franchise. That's just who they are. They're Conservatives. And so they will do the least they can to enable people to vote.
Right. Very lastly on that point, in terms of enacting this bill, will there be measures in place so that prisoners can receive information and be, you know, have the kind of education necessary about possible politicians that they might be voting for?
So, because you've got to remember too, it's not even though there is this law that, you know, prevents sentenced prisoners from voting, actually remand prisoners continue to have the right to vote, and they are roughly about 40% of the prison population at the moment. So the Electoral Commission has always needed to have processes in place to get information into prisons, for at least for remand prisoners up to now, so that they can make an informed choice, and that will continue. So the prisoners get information, and of course with the two referendums they'll get all that information relevant to there as well. And providing this bill on prisoner voting passes, then obviously prisoners who are then have the eligibility to vote restored, they'll get information on candidates, parties, referendum questions, and the way that, you know, has happened before.
That was Labour MP Andrew Little. The Wire.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.